2015 has been marked by some very prominent acts of global terrorism. However, while Islamic State dominates the headlines, attacks by Nigeria's Boko Haram militant group are just as deadly. This week, the militant outfit killed at least 80 people in a wave of suicide bombings throughout the country's northeast. The attacks come as Nigeria's government approaches its self-imposed deadline of December 31st to eliminate the terrorist group. Yann St-Pierre is a terrorism analyst with the Modern Security Consulting Group in Berlin. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Less than a week ago, President Muhammadu Buhari was essentially declaring victory over Boko Haram in Nigeria. Let's have a listen to that.
Boko Haram as an organized fighting force, we have dealt with them. Boko Haram cannot now marshal forces and attack towns or attack military installations. Technically, we have won the war because people are going back into their neighborhoods.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Yann St-Pierre, is he correct? Has Nigeria won the war against Boko Haram from a tactical perspective?
Well, I think the last few days speak for themselves. This is why President Buhari would make such a statement at this period of the year, which has always been known for a string of Boko Haram attacks. Especially that ID attacks, suicide bombers have occurred on a regular basis. It's baffling at best. It's poor PR, and unfortunately, it follows a continuous bad public relations and a bad strategy on the part of the Nigerian government. And why they choose this path remains a huge question mark.
Well, he does have a big self-imposed deadline looming, December 31st. He was voted into power last May, pledging to defeat Boko Haram by December 31st. How badly will his credibility be damaged in the wake of these latest attacks?
Well, definitely hurt because it's actually the second deadline. He imposed one that was scheduled for September originally, and he extended that deadline imposed another deadline following the changes he made to the chiefs of staff, changing it to the 31st of December. And President Buhari's credibility was already damaged because he took so much time handling the transition of power. He took almost 5 months to name a new cabinet. He says he wants to focus on corruption first. That's also been very troublesome. He's had the problems with Boko Haram. So his credibility is not high at this point, and it's only getting worse after his statement last week and obviously a deadline that will not be respected.
And the government's capacity, like on the ground capacity to deal with Boko Haram, I mean, how well equipped is the Nigerian military?
The Nigerian military is poorly equipped, not just in terms of equipment and weapons, but it has a poor morale, it has poor training capabilities. It's an army that's, despite changes, you know, there were one hopes for improvements, but in the end, they always become cosmetic changes. Corruption has played a huge role in the ineffectiveness of the army. And again, it comes down to credibility. The Nigerian army has a horrendous credibility at best. And as such, it's seen in many cases as the lesser of two evils. And combined with poor equipment, poor morale, mutinies, trials, yes, it's not very well equipped in all sense of the terms to fight an organization like Boko Haram.
In the last year for which we have these figures, which is 2014, Boko Haram killed more than 6,000 people. And the organisation has been increasingly using young female suicide bombers to carry out these attacks. What do you read into this tactic?
Well, it's basically they're adapting to increasing security measures. They started using young girls, the lowest so far, the youngest so far being 7 years old, starting in June of 2014. Tactically, it shows they adapt. They're trying to use all the vulnerabilities of the Nigerian society. So on the one hand, it allows them to the girls to go into markets, to go into safe areas where people would not suspect a young girl to be a suicide bomber. And also revealing are two other elements. One, the value they give to women. Obviously, they're it's very low. They're nothing more than a means to an end, a means to for violence or to sexual means or to maintain the compound. And on the other hand, it also speaks much of the conditioning. There was a case last November 2014, where a young girl blew herself up on her fourth try, and this, you know, she'd been turned back three times, and she tried a fourth time. So it says much of the willingness of these children, some of them being the children of widows, Boko Haram widows, about how good and how effective the conditioning and the propaganda of Boko Haram is to, condition and brainwash young women and young girls into killing themselves.
Heartbreaking. And of course, in 2014, Boko Haram kidnapped 276 girls from a secondary school, known as the Chibok girls. 219 still missing. What was the latest we heard about them?
Well, it's very much rumors, but the reality is, from an analysis perspective, from a field perspective, is that these young girls were rapidly spread out. They weren't held in one compound as the Chibok girls for financial, for security reasons, and they had a certain value. They were kept as a means to negotiate with the government, as a trump card. Nothing's been heard of them. There's always rumors saying, oh, yes, we saw some of the Chibok girls, but it's become right now, it's a very, very difficult to filter the facts from fiction. And one must not forget that, yes, nearly 200 girls were kidnapped, but unfortunately, Boko Haram kidnaps children on a weekly basis. And we're talking about thousands of people that were kidnapped by Boko Haram. And unfortunately, and it's extremely sad that the Chibok girls are almost a drop in the ocean in terms of the number of children that Boko Haram's kidnapped.
Mm. Well, just finally, Boko Haram, of course, pledged allegiance to Islamic State earlier this year. Has there been any evidence of IS providing material support or advice to the terrorist group?
Absolutely. And the relationship with IS began before the pledge. It began already in late 2014, where they would provide each other with access to networks and resources until the first quarter of 2015. Boko Haram was in a position to almost negotiate eye to eye with ISIS and IS. Since then, the situation underground's changed, where Boko Haram became vulnerable to especially IS's branch in Libya and the supplies that came from the north. And so that relationship has now become very, very strong. Boko Haram has access to the network, to the resources, and is able to spread its reach into Mali, into Niger, to Libya, and even some places like Ghana and Senegal. And that makes a case where, because of that alliance with the Islamic State, Boko Haram is no longer a regional threat, one that's limited to the Lake Chad region, but has truly become an African problem. And this is probably the biggest consequence of that relationship.
They actually call themselves the West African branch of IS sometimes, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. This is the name, the official name they exposed for the first time about 6 weeks after the pledge, so late April, early May. And it shows exactly the reach. It's no longer that when people, Boko Haram themselves never used the name Boko Haram. It's one that's been given by people in the area and media. But it shows that their views, their goals now are no longer regional, but they're truly one large swath of Africa, the West African part, and their reach into organized crime as well, just shows that their results are meeting their ambitions.
Mm. Jan St-Pierre, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Jan St-Pierre is a terrorism analyst with the Modern Security Consulting Group in Berlin. He was speaking to us via Skype.